My guest at this time is Chris Buskirk. He's the publisher and editor of American Greatness, and he is co-author of a new book by the same name, American Greatness, How Conservatism, Inc. Missed the 2016 Election and What the D.C. Establishment Needs to Learn. And Chris, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks very much for inviting me.
The book not only chronicles how the political establishment, both in terms of the Republicans and the Democrats, as well as the media, never understood Donald Trump during the 2016 campaign, but also how they failed to see how America was viewing the state of affairs in Washington and the campaign itself in 2016. So here's the chicken and egg question as we get started. Did the people respond to Trump, or did Trump respond to the people?
Am I allowed to answer yes? There's a little bit of both going on there.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, no, I think the answer is yes. It's a big question. It is really the question when one looks back at 2016. Look, Donald Trump he was 70 years old or 69 years old when he was running for president. I think he was a man in full at that point. And so I think he had and has fully formed opinions about this country, about what's the right way to govern and what's good for America. And the American people responded to him. Now, when did he respond to them in kind? I think so. I mean, we look back at sort of the late summer of 2015, and Donald Trump started to talk a whole lot more about immigration. Why? Because every time he did it, his lead in the polls over his primary rivals would grow and grow and grow. So, you know, just basic marketing says, well, if this is working, I'm going to keep doing more of it because it's going to help me win. But this is who he was. He's been talking about immigration and trade and foreign policy for a long, long time. This is someone, I think, who understands America in a way, believe it or not, that so many of the voices on the right that we've listened to, that I've listened to for a long, long time, just don't. And the question that we try and answer in the book is, how did we get here, and how do we, being here, and it's not a great place because we're in a place where we need to rebuild the American right. Donald Trump has won a battle, but not the war. How do we do it, and where do we go from here? That's really the task of the book, and that's where we leave the book. I mean, we answer the question of where we came from, but we also leave people with an idea of where do we go from here and how do we do it right.
It's right there in your subhead, How Conservatism, Inc. Missed the 2016 Election. And a lot of conservatives, of course, don't like to think of themselves as the establishment. They think of the apparatus of the two parties or the mainstream media. Who are you talking about when you refer to Conservative, Inc. as it related to the 2016 campaign?
Yeah, that's a term that we started using last year because it just seems to really nicely describe what we saw going on in the world of professional conservatism. That's what we are thinking of when we use that term, Conservatism, Inc. So what's that? Well, these are the people who go to Washington and never leave. And that's the journals, the think tanks. You know, we know the names of them. You know, when we talk about it in the book, National Review, The Weekly Standard, American Enterprise Institute, a bunch of others. You know, collectively, this is the intellectual infrastructure of the American right has been for 40 years, and they've done a lot of good over those years. I mean, Reagan, I don't think, was possible without Bill Buckley and National Review. And all honor to them for that work, but something changed. You know, there's about $500 million a year that's spent on what we call Conservatism, Inc. These are mostly nonprofits. And what do we have to show for it? I mean, is the country more conservative or less conservative than it was 30 or 40 years ago? Is the culture better or worse? And at a certain point, we had to sit back and say, you know what, we're spending a lot of money. We're spending a lot of time. A lot of people are devoting their careers to this, and we don't seem to be getting anything for it. So why not? I mean, this to me is business 101, which is to say, well, it doesn't seem to be working. We know what we want. How do we get it? And one of the diagnoses that we point out in the book is that we have, you know, inadvertently maybe, but we have developed our own class on the right, conservatives. We've developed our own class of people who never, ever leave Washington. They're permanent fixtures in Washington, and over time that has made them beholden to not to the people, not to principles, but to Washington itself. You know, there's in any big institution, there comes a time when the institution becomes about the institution and not about the mission. We want to get back to the mission, and the mission is America.
We're talking with Chris Buskirk. The book is American Greatness. And Chris, you mentioned a little bit earlier in our conversation that one of the things that a lot of voters seem to like about Trump was that since he was about 70 years old, he pretty much knew what he thought on things. I think some of the folks we were just talking about in what you call conservative ink would push back on that. A lot of folks that I've talked to, some who ultimately voted for Trump and some who ultimately did not, would say their opposition to Trump in 2016 was not because they were worried about upsetting the status quo or didn't care about the working poor, but mainly because Trump had kind of been all over the map on policies ranging from abortion to health care to immigration over the years, much of it before he became a full-time candidate, of course, and because he didn't comport himself in a way that they expected a president to act. So what's your reaction to that common explanation for why many conservatives, at least in Washington, never got behind Trump?
Yeah, well, every conservative in Washington always says the same thing, which is, you know, we're for overturning the apple cart, we're for mixing up the status quo, except for when it comes to actually doing it, you know, and that's the frustration that I had. Now, you go back and look at the policy complaints, you say, you know, you talk about abortion or foreign policy or immigration or whatever. Look, abortion is an issue that I feel very strongly about. I know a lot of people on the right do, and I'll just use that as an example. I mean, this is the man who reinstituted the Mexico City policy as soon as he became president. He sent Vice President Pence to the March for Life. He put Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court. I think he did have a legitimate change of heart on abortion. I mean, certainly his actions bear that out. Reagan had the same thing, right? Reagan was pro-choice earlier in his life and came to I think, a more fully developed and a more mature understanding of that. Did that happen with Donald Trump on abortion? It sure seems to. And that's one of the things where Donald Trump just never got credit from the professional right. I think the answer to the why is the second reason you think is they just didn't like him. They didn't like the personality. They didn't like the temperament. They thought he was, you know, coarse, a vulgarian, whatever. You know, this was a guy who didn't have the right accent. He's a real estate developer from Queens. He is not an intellectual from Manhattan. And I think it's as simple as that. He did not come from inside the establishment of the Republican Party. He was an outsider, and he was telling everybody up front, signaling up front, I'm going to change things. And that means that he threatened a lot of people's livelihoods, a lot of their prerogatives and their power. And they wanted one of their own. They wanted somebody who, you know, if you're at one of these institutions, you want somebody who comes and kisses the ring. Donald Trump explicitly didn't kiss the ring. He came to throw the moneylenders out of the temple, and the moneylenders didn't like it.
Let's talk about the other major group that's certainly not Conservatism, Inc., as you phrase it, but the people who voted for him. What are they seeing right now? What are their realistic expectations of a Trump presidency, and how deep is their loyalty right now?
It is deep. I will tell you that. I mean, I do a daily radio show based here in Phoenix. I'm on the air for 3 hours a day, Monday through Friday, and I say this all the time, but the reason, and you know this, I mean, but the reason the talk radio gets it right more often than, say, television type people is because we take calls, and we listen to people. We take calls all the time, and the people who voted for Trump, boy, even the people for whom Trump was a second or a third or a fourth or a fifth choice call us all the time, and they say, we agree with his agenda. We support that agenda. We do not support the agenda, even of the establishment Republican party. We support this idea of America First foreign policy, a pro-worker trade policy, a pro-citizen immigration and border policy. We want that. We want more of that. Their frustration, from what I'm hearing, is with Congress. It's not with Trump. They want an end to the constant undermining of Donald Trump. They just want that agenda. Now, do some people like him personally, some people don't, but what really resonates with voters, the ones that we talk to, is that agenda. And that tells me that what sometimes is called Trumpism will outlast Trump the man, whether he's one term or two terms. This idea of returning to an older type of republicanism, you know, a pre-World War II type of republicanism that really focuses on this country's citizens, on the responsibilities of government to its citizens. I think that's making a comeback, and we're only in the first inning of that.
A couple minutes left in our conversation with Chris Buskirk, publisher and editor of American Greatness, co-author of the book American Greatness. And Chris, I think I already know the answer to this next question, but based on the conversations that you've had with those same people, How much do those Americans care about the Russia investigation?
Well, I'll give you a great example of that. We had our book launch party two nights ago. We had about 130 people in a room, and it was not conservatism. I can tell you that. It was here in Phoenix. It was just ordinary people, business people, mothers, wives, whatever. It's just middle America all the way through, and the subject came up a couple of times in questions and just in talking with people. And to a person, nobody cares. Nobody cares. They said, why are we still talking about this? And the prevailing opinion is this is a D.C. story. It's manufactured by D.C. Media to talk about process. Meanwhile, people out here in Phoenix, people in Bangor, Maine, people in Wichita, Kansas are wondering, well, what is Washington doing for us? Why aren't they executing on the agenda that actually improves the country? Well, all they're really doing is fighting over who gets power in Washington. They're trying to fight over the pecking order and not over what they should do to be improving the lives of ordinary Americans. That's what matters to voters. They don't care about this Russia stuff. The only people who do are the people who are deeply invested in it already on the left. When you start to talk to just normal middle America, even Democrats, they think, it's just another D.C. story. This is just another dogfight. Why don't they, why don't they do their work and like we have to?
Last question, Chris. So ultimately, of course, we have national elections every 2 years and a presidential election every 4 years. And so there's still this tension, clearly, between the more establishment side of the Republicans and conservatism, Inc., as you would say it, as opposed to the core of the Trump movement. So is there going to have to be an uneasy marriage for the foreseeable future here? Did the Republicans need to get on board, assuming that any investigation here doesn't gain too many legs? What's going to happen here politically?
Yeah, well, regardless of Donald Trump's future, just to be clear, I don't put any stock in the Russian narrative. But whether he is president for a day, a week, a month, two terms, anything in between, the Republican Party needs to come to terms with his agenda. They need to come to terms with what he represents, with the agenda that he has outlined, because that is what won him the presidency. It wasn't his personality, right? In fact, it was explicitly the opposite. There were a lot of people who were turned off by his personality, but they rallied to the agenda that he outlined. So the Republican Party has its work cut out for it, because we're in a time of change. We're in a time of changing from the post-Cold War era that on the right was dominated by the Bushes, and now that so many of their policies were seen either to have failed Iraq or just not to reflect where the rank and file base of the party are, because there were this idea of compassionate conservatism or big government conservatism. That's something that sold inside Washington D.C., but Republican voters never wanted any part of it. So I think we're going back to our roots as conservatives and Republicans, and it'll be very, very interesting to see what the Republican Party does. I think it's going to be a new crop of candidates over the next 2, 4, 6, 8 years who figure out that this is actually a very traditional Republican agenda, and if we get back to basics, we can win elections. The way Republicans, by the way, have been doing at the state level very successfully for 20 years. I mean, Republicans control 33 state houses in this country. If we're able to translate that to the national level, we can do a lot of good for this country.
Chris, we'll have to call time there. Congratulations on the book. Thanks for your time with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
Chris Buskirk, publisher and editor of American Greatness, and he is co-author of a new book by the same name, American Greatness, How Conservatism, Inc. Missed the 2016 Election and What the D.C. Establishment Needs to Learn. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.